Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. Tim Clawson is our guest in our studios here in Milwaukee this hour. He's the author of Love Together, Longtime Male Couples on Healthy Intimacy and Communication. Tim has an interesting background. He's a jazz pianist and a jazz historian. He also founded a Milwaukee Gay Fathers Group back in 1995, which ran for about 10 years. He interviewed a number of people who are part of Outstanding Couples. The book, he says, wouldn't exist without each of these wonderful men who so well understood the purpose of this book, and here's what it is: to address the need for healthy examples of committed, lasting, loving relationships between men. He also has conducted many interviews with leading figures in the jazz world and a series of interviews for 16 families who lost loved ones in the September 11, 2001 disaster. We'll talk to him about those endeavors as well during the course of the hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. Tim, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Kathleen. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, great to have you here. You say early in the book that there is, and I guess this is probably true, a stunning lack of books in print on the subject of longtime male couples and their relationships. Why?
Why is there a lack?
Mm-hmm. Until your book.
Right. I don't have an answer to that question. I guess I was a little bit surprised in doing the sort of pre-research for the book and checking and seeing what was in print and thinking, wow, you know, with gay marriage in the news every 3 seconds, there just has to be a whole lot of stuff in print. And of course, I knew previously about some really good, well-known books on male couples, but just in checking around, there just hasn't been a heck of a lot available thus far. So that was certainly one of the reasons that I decided to proceed with this project 3 years ago.
And do you think that there's still necessity, particularly for young men who are gay, who are thinking about the rest of their lives and needing role models of people who have been together for a long period of time and can survive? It's not easy, I'm sure. It's getting easier, but it hasn't been easy to be a gay male or lesbian in this society for a long, long time. It's starting to become easier. But has there been a lack of that kind of very prominent role modeling?
On the one hand, yes. I think on the other hand, no. In terms of we see Elton John and his partner in the news, or we see George Takei and his partner, Neil Patrick Harris. There are some good, certainly, role models out there and available, and Elton recently got married, which is great, and so forth. But in terms of seeing a picture of Elton and his partner is wonderful, but then, you know, how does their relationship actually work day to day? You know, I don't think there's been a lot of role modeling sort of from the inside of how does a relationship actually work day to day? You know, how did they meet? Did they hit it off right away? How did they know that they were the right one? Were they intimate fairly quickly? How soon did they move in together? How do they handle conflicts? Have they ever been to counseling? You know, those types of things really haven't been explored, I don't think, in large measure in books and radios and film thus far. But it's very important. Mm-hmm. It's very important.
I found, and you must have as well, the people who have been together the longest tended to be of deep interest to me, particularly those who have been together over 50 years. And you have an interview, and you've done a subsequent interview with a Buddhist couple, and the man's partner died, husband died, and you went back and interviewed him again. But they had been together, and I always wonder this, gay couples, straight couples, people who have been together for such a long period of time, and what they have experienced in terms of losing your partner and in terms of this long togetherness in a society that 60 years ago you had to be pretty quiet about being gay.
Right.
Tell me about that couple.
In some respects, Eric and Eugene. They live in Portland, Oregon. They met in Chicago, actually, in the 1950s. Really remarkable people. Eric was actually a Buddhist monk for 10 years of his formative years. He spent that at Gethsemane Monastery in Kentucky, which is a very well-known place. Thomas Merton, in fact, was there at the time that Eric was there. He knew who Thomas was, though, you know, they didn't necessarily converse a lot. But Eric was always a very spiritual sort of person. And in a trip, he was going to visit another monastery to study, I believe. He had stopped in Chicago to meet with his mother, spend some time with her, and ended up meeting a man. And they ended up having a kind of a three-day whirlwind romance, which was a great revelation to Eric. And he happened to talk about this later with the head abbot, who basically said, well, you know, considering things, you haven't begun your official vows yet. Why don't you just, you know, explore the world, basically, is what he recommended. And that's basically what Eric did. He left the monastery at that point, met Eugene randomly, I think about a month or two later, and they ended up meeting and falling in love and moving to Portland, Oregon, and had a fascinating life together. And at the time that I interviewed them, Eric had been a Buddhist teacher for about 25 years. He's still very active in that. Brilliant man, super articulate, very open, very funny. And Eugene was as well. Eugene, I would say, was the more less outgoing of the two, but certainly not a shy person. And I had the honor and pleasure of interviewing them both prior to their 60-year anniversary, 59 and a half years or so, and just really hit it off well with them. We've never met in person, but, you know, talk in person by telephone, you know, frequently, once a month or so. And they did get married in Washington about 2 weeks before Eugene passed on from congestive heart failure last December, not this just December we just had, but the prior December. And so I had asked Eric maybe a week or so after Eugene passed away. I hadn't known Eugene passed away. I just called to check in, and I said, would you be open to interview on what it's like to lose a partner of 60 years? And he said, of course. I mean, he didn't even hesitate, and he's that sort of person. So we did our initial interview about 10 days after Eugene's passing, and then additional questions occurred to me, which I wished I had asked him at that time, and I called him back and I said, hey, can we do a part two? He said, well, sure, absolutely. So we did a part two about a month later, and then the day after what would have been their 61st anniversary, we did a part three. And that part three interview is the very last chapter in the book, and it's quite profound and powerful, Eric's insights on losing a partner and carrying on. It's really, it's kind of a wow. Mm-hmm. It kind of leaves you breathless after reading it.
Yeah, it does. How many of the couples that you interviewed had children? Were you surprised by the number who did?
I think about 20% or so. And by very various means, some having had children through a straight marriage prior to meeting their partner, others through adoption or through surrogacy. One couple I interviewed in New York actually found an abandoned baby in the New York subway system.
I wanted you to tell that story. That's an incredible story. They found an abandoned baby.
Right. The mother apparently had just ditched the child in the subway system, and one of the partners found him and ended up bringing him home, and they contacted the news
goodness.
And the police and so forth, and trying to find the mother who misplaced her child.
Oh.
Well, I don't think the child was misplaced, purposely misplaced, I guess. So ultimately, they ended up adopting their son, who is now, I think, like 18 or so. And that's certainly the most unusual parenting story of the people I interviewed. So,
and there's another story of a surrogacy situation where the woman's, who was going to be the surrogate, her husband was ex-military, and the couple was concerned about what his response might be.
Right. Yeah, it's a very funny anecdote. Tommy and Rich live in the Hollywood area, and they wanted to have a child or two via surrogacy. And when they went to meet the prospective mother, right, her husband was an ex-military, and they were kind of concerned. How is this guy going to deal with, you know, two gay men wanting to have a child and using his wife's womb to do so. So when they sat down and had their powwow, the moderator asked everybody, what is your family support situation for going through this process? And the military guy said, well, I'm very excited to tell my family that I'm trying to remember her name, Margaret is pregnant again, and that the child is not mine, and it's also not hers. So it was a good icebreaker, and of course the couple knew that things would be fine from that point.
Mm-hmm. I was delighted to read about, and there seems to be a theme. First of all, you didn't do interviews with people who had terribly tumultuous relationships. They were pretty even keeled. They were loving couples. But there was also this, not really whimsy, but just kind of this kindness. You know, you get to know somebody, and so you'll pick up something at the store that you know they will like because you know what they're going to wear, or you do something that's fun, something that's lively, that's spontaneous. There's kind of a joy about many of these couples in the very process of being alive.
Yeah, very much so. And one of the – I had pretty much a set question list, which I use for all of the interviews. And one of the, I think, really important questions in there was, you know, do you take your partner for granted, or do you not take your partner for granted, and how do you not take your partner for granted? And it seems, I didn't do an equivalent study with straight couples, but it seems like I think one of the neat things about being in a same-sex couple is we aren't handed sort of the set script that you're expected to go by, like straight couples perhaps are. You know, you couple, you're together forever, you have kids, so on and so forth. They kind of have to make it up as they go along. And it seems like maybe because of that, gay couples make an extra effort to be conscious of, you know, am I being considerate of my partner today? Am I, you know, what can I do to show them that I love them? You know, sure, they know that I love them, but what can I do to show that on a day-to-day basis? So I think male couples, at least the ones that I interviewed, seem to really make an extra effort to let each other know that they're loved and that they're special, and that the partner feels lucky to be with their partner.
So what did they do to show that?
All kinds of things, from flowers to cards to going on a surprise vacation. One of the couples in Texas I interviewed, who were actually profiled in Life magazine back in 1996. Steve likes to, on occasion, plan some elaborate vacation and then ask his partner, Mark, what are you doing? You know, are you free next weekend from Friday through Monday? Mark will say, yes. Well, where are we going? And he say, well,
I'm
stay
not
tuned.
Gonna tell you.
Right.
Great.
Right. So those kinds of things.
Yeah, those are good. We're living through this incredible era where state after state, I think we have 35 now, if not a couple more, you can get married if you're gay, lesbian in those states. I was interested in some of the stories where gay marriage became legal, and so couples got married, and it seemed to change something in how solid they felt their relationship was, and when you look at their extended family, how the family would then also embrace them more as a married couple.
Right. Yeah, very much so. I think for a lot of the people I interviewed, they went into marriage thinking, you know, this will be great, particularly in terms of now we can have all the legal benefits that straight couples enjoy, but not necessarily expecting that the process of getting married would alter their bond or their relationship in any major or profound way. And then finding in getting married actually it very much did, that they felt very much a deeper connection with their partner. They felt a tremendous affirmation, particularly from family members and so forth, and the larger society at large. So I think for most people it was a surprisingly profound and powerful experience to get married. And I know one of the couples I interviewed in San Francisco, one of the partners talked about they sort of had a situation in San Francisco where prior to marriage actually going through, gay couples had this sort of annual little protest they would do on a particular day. They would all meet at City Hall and do their protest wanting to get married, and they'd be turned away, and then they'd go back home, you know, and this was kind of an annual thing that they would do. Well, the mayor had somehow arranged that the couples on this particular year and day could get married. So they all went to do their usual thing, expecting to be turned down and go back home and being told, you know, you can marry today. Would you like to do that? And so one of the couples that I married got married at that time. They ended up being on CNN, and people they knew all over the world said, hey, we saw you get married today. How cool is that? And one of the interviewees had said, you know, prior to that experience, he'd been sort of lukewarm about same-sex marriage, but after the experience of being married, saw how absolutely important and powerful that was. So that was a real heart changer for him.
Mm-hmm. You talk about, and I'm wondering if there is a difference here between straight and gay couples, negotiating sex with a couple, that some will decide to be monogamous and then maybe at some point to have other partners and then become monogamous again. Is that something that a lot of the people you interviewed talked about negotiating?
It was certainly among the questions that I asked people if they had a exclusive relationship or not, and if they did have an exclusive relationship, how did they handle attractions to others? Because that's a very human phenomenon for everybody, regardless. And if they basically how they negotiated that whole terrain. And I think too, again, going back to the notion that there isn't kind of a standard script handed to gay couples on how to conduct their marriage, it seems to me gay men, and I, you know, in my own experience of a number of years, gay men seem to be, as a rule, much more open to talking openly about sex and talking openly about what they like, what they don't like. It's very common in male couples, if they're walking down the street, one will point out, hey, look at that guy. He's really cute. You know, what do you think? Mm-hmm. Or whatever. And where perhaps in a straight couple, that's not typically something that a husband is going to say to his wife, hey, she's really hot.
Probably
what do you think?
Not.
You know, so I think there's just a lot more freedom and openness to talk about and negotiate that terrain. And so I think for a lot of couples, it's kind of like, well, let's explore how our relationship can work for us going forward. And so it would not be uncommon necessarily for a couple to start out being exclusive and monogamous and then several years down the road talking about, hey, you know, do we want to open this up? You know, do we want to try this out? And in some cases that they've tried that, some couples would never want to try strict exclusivity. Some couples would never want to try anything but strict monogamy. There's really no one-size-fits-all sort of recipe. And it was interesting to find this San Francisco couple I mentioned earlier. They had started out very exclusive and later kind of opened up things to explore what is it like to have a more open relationship, and then finding over time that that wasn't working out so well for them. So they've gone back since that time to exclusivity.
Mm-hmm. And when it comes to being able to talk about sex and talk about what your long-term goals are and what's bothering you, do you think there's a difference here between the straight community and the gay community in terms of being more open, in terms of, because you got the world against you at least some parts of the world, and so it seems as though it might tighten the circle. It might make you want to have an ally more, that you might be more open to talk about what your happinesses are and what your problem areas are. Is that too much of a generalization?
Boy, I don't know. Possibly. I think one of the key themes really which emerged from the interviews, and I did this, you know, one of the key reasons for my doing the book in the first place was I haven't had such a spectacular track record in terms of establishing a long-time relationship with another guy. I would like to, but I was one of the many puzzled people on the sidelines meeting long-term male couples who seemed to have a really nice relationship together, wondering like, wow, how do they do it? How do they get along harmoniously? And so a big part of doing the book was really for my own education and learning. And one of the key themes which emerged and seems to be part and parcel a lot of these long-term male relationships is to have absolutely the most open, honest communication as possible, discussing the things that are tough to talk about, and talking about one's feelings. And, you know, I think gay men, as a rule, particularly in the couples that I interviewed, are much more open to and willing to go there.
Mm. Which also would indicate to me that people were open to talking to you. Did you find that there were a lot of couples who wanted to speak with you?
I think one of the couple factors really factored into that. I've done lots and lots and lots of phone interviews over the years in the jazz world and elsewhere, so I'm pretty versed in communicating and drawing people out and so forth. Another really important factor in the book and in doing these interviews was I offered every couple and interviewee from square one, you can have any level of anonymity you want with your interview. If you want to use your full names, that's great. If you just want to use your first names, that's fine. If you want to have me change your names altogether, that's totally great too. And so I think the fact of offering that to people up front made people much more willing to share and to be open, particularly the ones who chose anonymity, knowing that I wouldn't be using their names with their interviews.
Hmm. Well, you probably did the kind of book that they wish they had had.
Yes, definitely.
And that you had had.
Right.
Yeah. We're going to welcome phone calls for Tim. Our phone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, Tim Clausen is our guest. His book is Love Together, Longtime Male Couples on Healthy Intimacy and Communication. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. It's the culmination of many years of work. And how many interviews in total did you do?
Over 100.
Over 100 interviews.
Yeah.
And selected over 20 for this book.
Right. 23 to be exact, which is really, really hard. Really tough.
I would imagine.
Yeah. There's a lot of good leftover material. I may do a volume 2 at some point.
All right.
We'll see.
Good. He is a jazz pianist, and he's an interviewer. He has done interviews with people in the world of jazz, and he's also done interviews with people who lost loved ones during September 11. So this is a look at all of these years of interviews, and it's a look at what is it that makes for very successful, happy, long-term gay couples. And he asked a specific series of questions to everybody and found some very interesting answers and role models, really, for people to stay in relationships if they so choose for a long period of time. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. We'll be with you in a moment. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And let's go to phone calls for Tim. His book is To Love Together, is Love Together, Longtime Male Couples on Healthy Intimacy and Communication. And let's go to Fran in Neenah for our first call. Hi, Fran.
Hi. I had a question. I was just listening as I'm driving home from a meeting. And this your gentleman talked about couples that are monogamous, the homosexual couples that are monogamous for a while. And then they may decide to go off and have other relationships. And I'm wondering, is there no worry about AIDS anymore? And I'll listen to any comments off the offline. Thank you.
All right, Fran. Thanks very much for the call.
Okay. I think there's probably great concern about that. I don't know that I didn't explore it in great detail, but I would presume that the couples I interviewed who explored that tended to do so in a very responsible manner.
And there was also something that I read where they were concerned people who had lived through the AIDS epidemic tend to feel, not complete relief, but some relief that the enormity of that epidemic was not as great.
Right. And many of the couples who'd been together many, many years had certainly lost, you know, huge amounts of friends to mm-hmm. AIDS and suffered through that, you know, awful, awful time.
Let's go to Ellen in Kansas City. Hi, Ellen.
Hello, Tim. Hi, Kathleen. I just wanted to say that I bought one for myself, three books from Tim besides for SDFs. And I did read some, I did read Rough Draft, and I have to say, on any level, it is such a fabulous relationship book. To just see how other people manage relationships, mm-hmm. friendships, loving relationships, and just hardly matters. It's just one of the best books I've ever read on relationships.
Hmm. Oh, what a nice call. It's true. I mean, it's applicable to everybody, gay and straight. It is a book about how to make a relationship work.
Right. Yeah, very much so. There's a lot of the themes in the book are certainly very universal. All couples, you know, address. There's a lot of good pointers and ideas. I certainly learned a tremendous amount doing the book from Eric and Eugene, the couple in Oregon who'd been together 60 years, have a wonderful practice, which I think is such a great idea. And Eric's idea is for couples to repeat to each other once a month or maybe every other month their marriage vows. And he would say, particularly when he and Eugene were having a fight or a disagreement of some kind, Eric would say, okay, it's time to go in the next room and repeat our marriage vows. And of course, in doing so, they would be able to get to the larger picture of their relationship once again. So there's lots of good stuff in the book for everybody.
Right. Thank you very much, Ellen, for your call. Stephen in Eau Claire, hi.
Hi, Stephen. How are you doing?
Good, Stephen. How are you?
Good. I just wanted to call and say I agree with the guy. Me and my wife have been together for 10 years now, and we both believe that marriage is not ownership. We're atheists, and we trust each other. We talk about our sexual experiences, our sexual desires. We are very open with each other, and we've been monogamous, and we've flirted around and stuff like that, but I don't think that, you know, I'm just no ownership. I don't own her. She doesn't own me. We love each other. We're committed to each other and making our family work. And I think it's more of a religious thing that people put on each other that if you make sex the point of your relationship, then you're doomed to fail, I feel.
Well,
a relationship's more than just sex.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. And the sexual experiences change in your lives, too. You know, and I think this was evident with some of the couples that you interviewed, that it was a much more prominent part of the younger couples' lives
yes,
than as you get older.
Very much so. Yeah. And I think maybe just for men in particular, in your younger years, your sex drive tends to be a very significant portion of your life. And perhaps as you age, it tends to become more in balance and in perspective with all the other categories in one's life.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
He mentioned, I think he said they were atheists, but it brought to mind spirituality because I know you asked about spirituality and we talked about the Buddhist, the moving story at the end of the book. What about spirituality and all the forms that it takes? Did you find that many of the couples had to feel really good about their relationship involved in a faith-based community? Did they go to church regularly? What did they do?
Very much spanning the gamut that way. Some very devoted to their church and their church communities. Some are involved in daily prayer and meditation. That's a very important thing. I also interviewed couples, and I've certainly known plenty of gay men over the years who have left their church feeling that their church didn't want them or that had religious families perhaps who disowned them. I mean, some people have been through some really awful kinds of things that way in terms of people using religion to to disqualify them as human beings or that kind of thing. So some gay men have the feeling that, why do I want to belong to an organization that hates me or tells me that I don't belong or I'm not worthy or those kinds of things. So there certainly is a segment of the population that way. But I do find that gay people seem to be very deeply spiritual people regardless and have a real sensitivity for other human beings, tend to be very compassionate towards others, have a feeling for those who are disenfranchised in the world, the handicapped, the outsiders, the poor, the marginalized, and so forth. I think having that kind of outsider perspective tends to help you to become a more spiritual and compassionate person overall.
That's interesting response. Karen, Prairie du Chien, hi.
Hi. Your guest kind of made my point for me just a few moments ago. Listening to everything he said, it struck me how universal all these statements are. You see the thoughtfulness. You try for the thoughtfulness, whether it's a gay marriage or a straight marriage. You try to have open dialogue, whether it's a gay marriage or a straight marriage. You see couples who maybe are alienated with their family, whether they're gay or straight. It's just, everything is so universal.
Do you agree with that, Tim?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of parallels for sure. At the same time, there are also differences. One example here in Milwaukee, if a boyfriend and girlfriend are to walk down Wisconsin Avenue hand in hand, no one would even think twice about it, including them and all the people passing by. For two guys, though, holding hands down the street, they may have an okay time with that, or they may run into, negative comments from people or worse. So I think gay people grow up tending to be maybe much more hypervigilant, particularly if you grow up in a small town or a backwoods place where being gay is simply, you just know it's not something you talk about in your family and in your community. If you don't want to have a lot of repercussions from people who maybe aren't as knowledgeable or educated about that. And things are improving, thank God, in the world, day at a time. But we still have a long ways to go.
Yeah, we shouldn't be so naive as to think that it's all over now, that there isn't any kind of looking askance or discrimination for that matter.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Karen, for your call. I was interested in – tell me about this, because I find this interesting. The early part of the book, I can't remember the couple's names, but he's going through divorce. He's married to a woman. She's an alcoholic. The divorce is happening. He's told – and his attorney knows that he's a gay man, but he hasn't acted on that in any way. He goes to some kind of a bar and for the first time has a gay experience and winds up falling in love with this man. How many of the people that you interviewed had led different kinds of lives in terms of getting married to somebody of the opposite sex, perhaps having families, because they couldn't be true to who they were considering the state of society not that long ago?
I would say a good percentage. Hard to pull a figure out of the air exactly on that one. And I actually put that couple first in the book. I think partly because as a gay father myself and having founded and run the Milwaukee Gay Fathers Group for 10 years, I'm very partial to gay dads. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, in back at the time that our group was meeting, virtually everybody in our local group was either in a straight marriage at the time or coming out of one, this kind of thing. And it was interesting. Some years ago, a number of us went to a national parents group meeting in Philadelphia, probably in about the third year of our group. And we met a lot of other gay parents, gay dads from the East Coast and from the West Coast. And we found that gay fathers groups along the coast tended to be comprised much more of gay couples who had never been married, who were adopting kids, who were having children via surrogacy and so forth. So I guess due to the fact that our population here in the Milwaukee group was almost exclusively guys who had fathered children through a straight marriage and so forth, I tend to be rather partial towards guys who've had that background.
Mm-hmm.
So, but definitely, I would say the majority of people I interviewed did not come from that particular background.
Yeah, and what are the sets of issues that those fathers were dealing with? Did they find it difficult for their children to move into a relationship? Was there any concern on the part of the children? Was it flawless? Was it just love all around?
No, generally not. Generally not. Generally, the whole process of coming out to their spouse and their children was a real roller coaster ride. Often some very painful and difficult divorces as a result of that. A wife who felt that she'd been duped all along and had been in this marriage with a guy who was perhaps using the straight marriage as a cover, you know, that kind of thing. Rarely was that the case, actually. They may have been aware that they had gay feelings, but it wasn't necessarily something they communicated about or felt that they could communicate about. And further, growing up in this society up until more recently, there weren't all these other kind of options available. It was like you're a guy,
right.
You grow up, you start dating females in junior high and high school and in college, and then you date more seriously, and then you meet a woman, and then you get married, and you have children, and then grandchildren, and you retire. And
then you die. Right.
All of that.
Yeah, all of that. The whole life cycle.
Sure.
So do you think there will be a lot less of that now?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. There's a lot more available in terms of articles, things to read, my book, for one, gay characters in movies and on TV shows. And, you know, wow. I mean, just looking at the support for same-sex marriage just in the last 10 years has just grown unbelievably.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of couples who've been around for decades are absolutely stunned at how quickly things are moving in a positive direction in terms of gay marriage, which seems to be inevitable in all 50 states.
Mm-hmm.
Fairly soon, we hope anyway.
It is something, isn't it, when you think about it? It's just pretty remarkable.
It really is.
Yeah. We're welcoming more phone calls. Tim Clawson is our guest. Tim's book is Love Together, Longtime Male Couples on Healthy Intimacy and Communication. Who's on the cover of the book?
I had asked a number of couples if they would be open to share a recent photo of themselves for the cover of the book. And a number of couples sent some great photos. There's a thumbnail, five thumbnail photos along the top margin. There are five thumbnails across the bottom margin. And then the big central photo is Willie and Greg. They're a couple who own a lodge, a gay bed and breakfast in Vermont. They perform a lot of the marriages in Vermont, and it's just this really, really beautiful, sweet, warm photograph of Willie kissing Greg's forehead. And if you actually look at the shape of their faces and so forth, it makes a heart, along with the V and the letter love, which I think dovetails perfectly with the theme of the book.
Mm-hmm.
But the moment I saw that photo when they sent it to me, I'm like, wow, that's the cover photo.
Yeah. We welcome your phone calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow at this time, we'll be taking a look at the life of Bayard Rustin, one of Dr. Martin Luther King's closest advisors, a strategist and tireless activist, probably best remembered as the organizer of the 1963 March on Washington. He helped mold MLK into an international symbol of peace and nonviolence. Yet as an openly gay man in a very homophobic time, history has almost forgotten him. And our guest has written a book about him, The Invisible Activist, activist, and that will be the focus of our conversation tomorrow. Central Time coming up after 3 o'clock today, a review of Governor Walker's address last night about his plans for the state of Wisconsin. Also a look on happenings in Congress this week and a discussion of the day's news. That's after 3 o'clock today. For you to join this conversation, our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. And we're talking about Tim's book. He interviewed over 100 people. And they are gay couples. Some are married, some are not. Some, I guess, everybody had to have been together at least 10 years, but some were together for a long, long period of time. And they just open up about all kinds of issues and what it's like to be in a successful, long-term, committed relationship. Tim wrote the book because he felt that there just wasn't this kind of book available, and it was important for there to be. And so there is. And we welcome your calls. Again, it's 800-486-8655. Who were the, it was the first military marriage. Tell me about that couple.
Gary and Dan Ross were the first same-sex couple in America to marry. They met when Gary was a student at the Naval Academy in Annapolis. And Dan was a flight attendant. They actually met through a personal ad. This was they've been together, I think, about 14 years now. Gary actually ran the personal ad. Had to be very, very careful in doing so in terms of, you know, at that time.
Sure.
Right. If you wanted to stay in the Naval Academy, you generally wouldn't want to be dating other guys. Not a smart thing to do. So they ended up meeting and hitting it off really, really well. There seemed to be especially well-suited super guys. They have traveled all over the country. One of the, I think, challenges in their relationship, Gary is a lieutenant with the Navy, and they would literally spend months apart and see each other for a couple of days every few months. So great spaces of time when they were not able to be together. Also, their relationship entailed them to move every year and a half, uproot and start over. And Dan has, you know, kept the home fires burning, you know, throughout that time and so forth. They had always wanted to get married and had learned that gay marriage that don't ask, don't tell in the military was being abolished, and wanted to marry at the very first moment that would be possible to marry, which of course meant marrying on the East Coast somewhere. And they actually married at Moose Meadow Lodge, the couple I mentioned who are the cover boys on the cover of the book, run that particular lodge, and they actually married there. So they timed the marriage ceremony where the officiant, Greg, would say, you know, pronounce them married right at the stroke of midnight. So they literally could be the very first couple to marry. And in fact, apparently the marriage ceremony wound up about 38 seconds, I believe, before midnight. And everybody had to kind of wait. And they had a little timer there. And as soon as it, you know, the timing went to 000, they were pronounced married and became the first military couple to marry. Super guys, actually, since the time of our interviews, Gary has left the military officially. He still works with the military in a capacity, but he's working full-time now in civilian life, and it's nice that the two of them can spend as much time together pretty much as any regular couple and are really enjoying that a whole lot.
That must be a hard life to be apart from each other that much.
Wow, yes. Yes.
Very, and to move that often, too. The military life is not easy.
Right.
Email from Haley, who wants to know why the book didn't explore lesbian couples.
Ah, great question. And I have been asked that a lot. It's certainly a natural question. I think there's absolutely a need for a female counterpart to this book. But I think that book needs to be done by a lesbian. as she will have greater access to the lesbian community. I think women would be much more comfortable talking with another lesbian about that. I could not get the depth of interviews probably with lesbian couples that I was able to with gay males. So I totally believe in the concept of a female counterpart to this book. The other factor too, not that a book including male and female long-term couples wouldn't be of value. Absolutely it would. But I find that in my experience, just in the way that they say, you know, men are from Mars, women are from Venus, whatever, males and females tend to be cut from a different cloth, if you will. Male couples also tend to be very different in so many ways from female couples. And I felt that to include both of those in the same book would be just way too wide a demographic to be interviewing. I wanted to be much more focused in this approach. So mm-hmm. I hope some female will want to do the counterpart to this book, and I'll be happy to be of help to her in terms of offering advice, thoughts, ideas, if she wants to do that.
And let's talk about the whole interview process for a moment, because you're obviously skilled at it and you're a fan of it. You've also done interviews of jazz players, and I'm interested in the interviews you did with people who lost loved ones in September 11. Tell me about that project. What did you do?
I think like a lot of Americans, I was really stunned by the 9/11 disaster. Everybody was, you just kind of like, wow, you didn't know really what to think about it.
Right.
I wanted to do something to help out. I had done a lot of jazz interviewing at that point, and the idea just sort of occurred to me to reach out to some of the 9/11 families and offer to do a series of interviews with families, friends, loved ones of their lost loved one about their recollections of the deceased. So the group that I ended up doing interviews for were all widows, 9/11 widows who'd lost their husbands. I found that men were not open to talking with me, interestingly.
Really?
Yeah. But the other thing that I think was so neat about doing this particular set of interviews was that virtually all the women I did interviews for about their husbands had children at that time who were maybe 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years old. And these kids, as they grew up, would not probably have much conscious recollection of their father, and they could go back to these time capsules, if you will. I recorded the interviews by telephone on cassette tape, and when the interviews were completed, I actually sent the tapes to the widows, and they could have these tapes to listen to as they wanted to,
very
when they
nice.
Wanted to. They were – each person gave me a set of 6 people they wanted interviews with, and obviously got permissions from the people to be interviewed by me. But they were, boyhood friends, coworkers, college roommates, so on and so forth. So it's been really wonderful throughout the years to hear back from some of these women and say, oh, my child who is now 16 got to hear the tapes for the first time, and they were really, moved by them, and we're so grateful that you took the opportunity to do this. So it was just something that I wanted to do. I felt like to reach out and help, and it was a very powerful and, gratifying experience for sure.
Yeah, what a nice thing, Tim. Let's go to John in Washington, D.C. Hi, John.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you for this wonderful show and for your wonderful ongoing discussion about LGBT issues.
Thanks, John.
I just wanted to thank your guest for his book and for its specific male focus. I work in LGBT rights professionally, and so I talk to and consume a lot of media from opponents of LGBT equality. And if you look at what our opponents put out and just at the history of anti-LGBT persecution, it really does focus especially on male persecution, the obsession with regulating, squelching male sexuality. So I think that as we push back against homophobia and as our culture evolves, it's especially important to specifically counter homophobia against gay males. And I think this book is a really great way to do that, to show the loving relationships that we form. And as a man has been married almost 9 years myself, I'm really grateful for all these, these stories of these wonderful couples to be put out there, to put our faces on it, and to show that we love just as deeply as everyone else.
Oh, I think you love a little more, John. I know both John and his husband, Michael, and you guys are just terrific. You really are. You are. You're just an inspiration to everybody. Tim should interview you at some point.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe for volume two.
Absolutely. There you go. Do you want to respond to what he said, Tim?
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate the kudos and congratulations on 9 years. I'm still trying to get past a ninth date, actually, so haven't met the right one yet, I guess, but working on it. I'm working on it. But yeah, and you know, one of the things that Eric in Portland talked about, the couple who'd been together 60 years, was that he said, you know, gay people have been lied to over the centuries that, you know, you are only sexual beings and you are not able to love. You are not able to share love. You are wicked. You are perverted. You are, you know, all these kinds of things. And so, you know, that is now changing. And one of the points certainly in doing this book is to show people, hey, yes, gay people have big hearts. We have very loving relationships, and we have things we can teach others through that.
Thank you, Tim, for being with us. John, always a pleasure to hear from you. Thank you for your call. Tim Clausen and his book is Love Together, Longtime Male Couples on Healthy Intimacy and Communication. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour, and thanks to Scotty Myers for on-air production in Milwaukee.